Rio Ferdinand to Scholes. Beckham, Scholes again. Now, Heskey's to his left unmarked. Emil Heskey, could it be five? Yes, it is!
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
On a sad day. It's a sad day today, but it's a day that we all knew was coming because it's the day that we found out that Sven-Goran Eriksson had died. It's quite sad, isn't it, Terry? Because I know for you and I, Sven had an unknowing important part in our first steps in creating our own content. He's always been someone who's had a place in my heart anyway, just because he was the manager of England at a very entertaining period and not necessarily on the football pitch. We've known he's been ill for a long time and this was coming. So when I heard the news today, it was, go well, Sven. Thanks for everything you did. You may not have been the best England manager, but you were a good England manager and there are far too few of people like that.
Yeah, I felt sad when it came, but the sadness of, but with mixed with the knowledge that we knew that it was coming, that it had been announced, we were aware of it, tinged with that sense that Sven had a reputation for enjoying his life, sometimes to excess, and he was a man with flaws, I suppose you could say, maybe not, I don't know, it depends on your point of view and how willing you are to judge people for their personal lives and how they conduct themselves. You know, he made choices in life, did Sven, and he made bold choices, and some of them paid off and some of them didn't, and some of them caused him notoriety and the other ones caused him notoriety, especially when he was England manager. And Graham, when you and I were cutting our teeth in this whole content creation business back in the mid-noughties, we were doing a website called The Onion Bag. There may be a few listeners who remember us from those days. And it was a weekly satire website, and it was an attempt to write football satire, which was at its peak moderately successful, and I would say also at its peak pretty good as well. And Sven was a regular in those pages for his exploits, particularly of a personal nature. And I was reading through his Wikipedia page to sort of like re-familiarize myself with his life, because I hadn't thought an awful lot about those days in a long time. And names like Mark Palios and Faria Alam and Ulrika Johnson and Nancy Dell'Olio all came back and just created this universe around Sven, the Svenverse, that was just full of joy, I think, you know, and controversy and fun. At a time, I think, perhaps, I don't know, when people were maybe perhaps a little bit more accepting of things like this than they are now. I don't know. I'm probably just being nostalgic. But I had a huge amount of affection for Sven-Göran Eriksson as England coach and as a consequence after, and found him an easy man to forgive, as I'm sure I think a lot of people found him an easy man to forgive. Yeah. And I mourn his passing.
That time was weird, that time when he was in charge of England. It's difficult to think back to it now because this is a pre-social media age. And so this is an age where tabloid newspapers had a lot more power. That was part of the reason why The Onion Bag was something that we enjoyed writing so much, because it was our piss take of the tabloid media and the way that football was being presented to people. And at the end of it, we stopped doing it because you couldn't tell the difference between the media and the satire that we were coming out with. But I always think that Sven, he is the Onion Bag. All of his life was just one Onion Bag story after another. You couldn't make it up, but obviously we did. And we had a lot of fun doing that. It's difficult to imagine what those times are like now, because I suppose it was the start of the sort of reality TV era, the sort of Big Brother era and all that sort of thing. And again, it was before the social media era. So the importance of the tabloids and the way that the soap opera of his life was actually a very distinct point in time, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, and then there was a darker side to the early 2000s as well, as we know it across the entire world. And I watched the documentary on Prime today when I heard he died, which is really good because it takes you, obviously, as you'd imagine, right the way through his life, but actually is quite beautiful at the same time because he's contributing to it knowing that his end is coming. There's a few bits in it where I would defy anyone not to well up a little bit, if I'm honest with you, because it is that good. You know, from really, you have to say, humble beginnings, because he was running an amateur side that did very well. And then he found himself, you know, well, we know the story now because he got so much traction and became one of the greatest managers across Europe, and then decided to come to England where we talked about the press. You're right. It'd be interesting to see what social media would do now. But I think people are a bit more enlightened now. But at the time, it was seen as, you know, the FA were a bunch of traitors because they'd brought in a foreign manager. I mean, even using that word now, I think it carries a little bit of weight, doesn't it? So I prefer to use overseas manager. When you hear David Beckham talking about him in the documentary, he talks about kind of, he brought a bit of lightness back to England when they felt, you know, everyone was kind of a bit scared of, you know, that they've got all this potential, but the, you know, the weight of expectation on their shoulders, and he kind of tried to lift that a little bit. You think about it, remember Beckham had been sent off a few years earlier against Argentina, and ultimately England ended up playing Argentina in one of the tournaments, and Beckham ended up scoring. You know, he even credits Eriksen with kind of rehabilitating himself in the public eye. And of course, he gave Rooney his debut, and he talks at great length about how excited he was about that. So, you know, there's two highlights there. But of course, the biggest one, of course, is the huge win in Munich. If there's a moment from his professional side that endears him to England supporters or anybody who follows football, it will be that. That's got to be one of the greatest moments for anybody that watches England. It is well worth a watch, and it did make me think a lot about him, about those years. And it's incredible, isn't it? As Terry said, he had quite a colourful life, which was in complete contrast with it. He carried himself, the way he spoke. You know, he wouldn't look out of place in an accountant's firm. But, you know, professionally, he knew his stuff. And I think he's left wonderful memories, I think, for anybody who's been involved in England football or anyone who's followed it. Looking back at how badly the press behaved around him as well. I mean, I know he didn't help himself, but this is a guy with a private life. They've hounded out England managers before, and they've hounded out England managers since. And, you know, they set him up with that fake shake thing. And he was ultimately sacked for that, which was disgusting. He was conned. And I know he got a lot of money back from the News of the World, but he was involved in the early part of, well, not through any choice, but he was involved in the early phone hacking scandals. That's where it was starting to come out as well. So, yeah, he's played a big part in modern English, British history, sporting and cultural as well. Yeah, I also mourn his passing.
So how do we think he will be remembered? Because you can't say Sven-Göran Eriksson without mentioning golden generation, a bunch of players that he supposedly never got the best out of, but did have most of them on the pitch at the same time. It was a real lose-lose situation, wasn't it? You couldn't play all of them, but whoever you missed out, you'd be wrong for it. You'd end up having to play Joe Cole on the left, or even worse, playing Paul Scholes on the left. Steve Gerrard playing in a very, very reduced role in defensive midfield. And of course, David Beckham, even if he had two broken legs, would have to be wheeled out and put on the right wing, wouldn't he?
Unless, of course, he was playing against Northern Ireland, where he played in that ludicrous...
Oh my God, the quarterback role.
And we deservedly got beat. And it was shocking. Of course, the age-old adage of, you know, how do you play Lampard and Gerrard, you know, in the same team, which was under Eriksen's stewardship and dogged him throughout his entire time at England. When you think in what a bad place England were when they lost to Germany and the final game at the old Wembley, when you consider where we were and then we're to go from there in a relatively short space time to Munich, and then David Beckham's last-minute free kick against the Greeks to qualify for 2002. That was the high point, wasn't it? I'm just fact-checking, remembering, making sure I've got my memory right, that this was all that too. So what a ride we went on from Keegan quitting in the shitter to Eriksen and Beckham rescuing us and getting us into the World Cup. What a ride that was. in such a short space of time. And I think that one of the reasons why I'm always will be so well disposed towards him, and was well disposed towards him during his time there. I had faith and patience in Eriksen all the way through, even though actually it was a pretty unspectacular career. But to get to three consecutive quarterfinals, you know, modern England time, that's not great. But actually at the time, at least, you know, he was consistent and he brought consistency, even if actually the football was not terribly good and had more low points than highs. But as I say, I think he brought a lot of character. Paul Hayward wrote an excellent obituary on him and said so many wonderful things about him, but pointed out that when the FA appointed him, they didn't really know him. And I think they were expecting this sort of like glacial, calming presence to come in and hopefully instill a little bit of calm and order in what was notoriously quite a ego-driven dressing room in England. But in fact, Sven was not like that. He was a fiery spirit, as the tabloids were more than happy to point out, and people like us in the Onion Bag were more than happy to rip off as well. He just brought that. Let's not forget, he was the guy who was photographed outside Roman Abramovich's house in 2003 when he took over at Chelsea and tried to poach him. Man United almost poached him as well when Ferguson went. And of course, yes, the fake shake thing was, I think, in isolation, he might have survived that. But I think by which point the FA had kind of done with him and his ways. But I don't believe that there was anything personal going on here. I think Sven is a professional, and if there's someone who wants to hire him, Sven will talk to them because he's a professional guy. And I think a lot of people see it that way. And interestingly, I think we now live in an age where actually that's a lot more understood and a lot better understood. But at the time, yeah, the English public were not really in the mood for that. So yeah, an incredibly mixed England career. But when you think about Wayne Rooney and Michael Owen, you think of Gary Neville, think of David Beckham. These guys have gone on to have relatively, to a lesser or greater degree, relatively influential people in the world of football and beyond to a greater or lesser degree. Probably not so much Michael Owen. And Sven is part of that. And as Jan points out, and I think you point out, Graham, he occupied that point in history when the tabloids were at their worst, with years remaining before they end up becoming complete and utter irrelevant and just like link farms and sidebars of shame and not driving the agenda anymore because social media took over and did that. And that's the thing that the Onion Bag always wanted, was to bring down the football tabloid media. But in fact, it was social media that did it instead. That's all good.
I think that his time as an England manager, I hear what you're saying. I think when you compare it to modern times, maybe not as successful, but you know, three quarterfinals is pretty good going. And if you look at the managers that came after him, it's not until you get to Southgate that you actually get a serious candidate for a top England manager. Certainly, I will remember him as being one of the recent, I wouldn't say great, but certainly very, very good England managers to have got us to those tournaments and to take us deep within them. And as I said, you look at some of the names that came after him that didn't get anywhere near what he achieved. So for that, we should be grateful, I think.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, well, you look at the guys, Terry's already mentioned Keegan, who preceded him, and then you've got Steve McClaren, who followed him and famously failed to get us to a Euros. And then Fabio Capello comes in afterwards, and as soon as the press turned on him, he said, well, sod this, I'm not having any of this, and quite rightly walks away. Perfectly justified in doing so as well. But you go even further back as well. You've got Glenn and the tabloid show that got him out as well. Beforehand, you had Terry Venables. Terry Venables is fondly remembered because he took us to a semi-final. But he was only in charge of that side for 2 years. The only competitive games he managed for England were at Wembley. So it's not really fair to compare his time in charge, even though he was much better at playing all of the media than most of the other managers that have taken the role. And you've got to include Bobby Robson in that as well. And of course, before that, you've got Graham Taylor and the disastrous reign that he had. So, yeah, Sven does really shine in all of that time. And it brings us back to the modern day about how Southgate's been remembered. And, of course, he's been derided for playing unenterprising football. But for God's sake, when you go back years and years and years, I mean, I'm quite long in the tooth now, and all I can remember is a load of old crap going back.
Has been mostly crap, England, and it was just moderately less crap, I think, with Sven. I mean, again, we had some truly wonderful, great moments with Sven as coach, and there's an era of England that starts with Greenwood resigning and Bobby Robson taking over and ends probably with Sven in a way. And then after that, it hits complete rock bottom with McLaren. And then there's this rebuilding process that takes place after failure to qualify from Euro 2008. But I think that there's, in terms of narrative, there's, and you wanted to point it down as a narrative into eras. And I think that, you know, there is an era of England where there's a link between Robson all the way through to Sven. And that's a good way to round off that particular era before, you know, things really, really went downhill for England.
I think as well, Sven's period in charge of England coincides with the Premier League really fancying itself as the greatest league in the world. When the Premier League arrived, it was pretty low rent on the world stage. But I think by the time you get to Sven being in charge, there is this feeling that we rule. The turning point was probably when United won the Champions League in 99. Just in the last knockings of injury time, that turned around what should have been a 1-0 defeat to Bayern Munich and won. And I think it was just assumed that British clubs should be ruling Europe and English football should be ruling Europe as well. But we all just keep going back to the same thing over and over again about what defined his period in charge of England. And it's really the press and the media and about the persona that they created for him. And he was quite happy to live in that in certain respects. But I think the thing was, I think they were expecting him to be ashamed of what he did, and he never was. And I think that's why we love him so much, because he just did what he wanted to do and he lived a great life. And yet, I would echo what Yana said. Watch the documentary. It's done really well. So it's a bit of Scandi Noir about it as well, actually, with the drone shots going over the Scandinavian forests. But
yes.
Yeah, I'll accept that. I'll say, yeah, why not? Go for that. Yeah.
It's quite interesting what you were saying about the you know, the celebrity culture and things like that that was going on at the time. Again, as I said, considering his outward appearance, he still was, I think, quite happy to live in that world, as you said, as Beckham was at the same time.
Yeah.
And if you remember when they went to the World Cup in Germany, he allowed all the wives and girlfriends to go along as well, which created this whole other media circus. I think looking at it now, he was quite happy to live within that chaos, even though you would look at him and go, this is the least chaotic man there is. But the reality was, he seemed to thrive in those situations.
Well, yeah, I think he understood it completely. He understood what being England manager in the mid-2000s was. I don't think you could have done it better. And yes, it was disappointing that there didn't ever seem to be a plan B with Sven. If things started to go wrong, as they inevitably would do against Phil Scolari, whichever team Phil Scolari was managing at the time, then yes, there wasn't a plan B. But yeah, you can't legislate for Big Phil.
No, and of course the FA went after Big Phil to replace Sven, didn't they? The story is, and it may not be true, but the story is that Mrs. Scolari found a tabloid journalist rummaging through their garbage one night and made it clear to Phil that, you know, this was not going to go well, and he walked away. I mean, again, that may be completely and utterly made up. As an international coach, limited, obviously a magnificent club coach. I mean, Lazio's greatest manager, probably. Lazio fans will correct me on that, but certainly in the top two, if he's not. And I mean, wonderful work at Benfica, and arrived with a trophy cabinet bulging. You know, it was a sort of sensible choice, I think. It would have made, if you are going to go for that overseas manager. It's just that, yeah, I mean, as we repeatedly say, club management and international management are two different things. Perhaps part of Sven's problems, and Paul Hayward picks up on this, is that, you know, he had plenty of time on his hands, did Sven, and that maybe that was where some parts of his life began to unravel or not, or actually pick up quite nicely. It's entirely depending on your morals and your point of view on how you look at these things. Just how bad do you feel about having an affair with mid-noughties Ulrika Johnson? I don't know. I'm not here to judge people on how they would feel about that.
Hey, there's different times, Terry, different times.
I think my favourite story is Didi Hammond in his book when he says that in a post-season camp at Manchester City, because obviously Sven had a career after England, one of which, part of which was coaching Man City, and Didi Hammond is there by the pool, and out comes Sven with two glasses and a bottle of champagne, and he plonks them down in front of Didi. It's 10 o'clock in the morning, and Didi says, "What are we celebrating, Sven?" And Sven says, "Life, Kaiser, life." And I think the thing that I like the most about that is he's got the absolute brass balls to refer to Didi Hammond as the Kaiser. I reckon Didi added that himself.
You know what? There may be a little bit of Sven rubbed off on him. I think it's great that we're remembering Sven with a smile on our face, because I think that's how he'd really like it, because, yes, he gave us a lot of joy. So, yeah, Sven Goran Eriksson, we will remember you. Right, so let's go back and talk about the sort of crap that we normally talk about rather than all that lovely fun we had reminiscing about football 20 years ago. What hell are we going to talk about this week? Oh, I'll tell you what it is. It's poor old French football fans. Poor French football fans. Well, they soon will be poor if they want to start watching French football along with all the other football that you've got to pay for. You may have noticed, if you read the box set, that we haven't been covering French football so far this season. And that's because it hasn't been on. It's not been on our TVs. We've not been able to watch it, not been able to tune in on TNT Sports on a Saturday night or a Sunday night and grab some Ligue 1 action because the deal finished and they couldn't settle a new one. So Ligue 1 obviously can't go low enough for any of the TV companies, any of the broadcasters to actually buy it from them. So they've decided that they're going to sell it themselves. The Ligue 1 Pass is now going to be an online thing. They're quickly cobbling together an app for you to watch it through as well. And for $9.99 a month, you will be able to watch all of the Ligue 1 games.
Terry, I'm going to ask you about this. Is this going to work?
I don't believe it will. This Ligue 1 Pass, I believe, exists in other markets that also don't want to pay Ligue 1 for their football rights. And I think it's relatively common. I mean, La Liga TV is effectively the same thing. It's because, like, they would take that away from the UK if a broadcast came and said, "We'll give you money for exclusive access and we control it all." $9.99 a month in the UK market for French football fans, I think that's asking a lot. There are French football fans, and there are, of course, French people who live in the UK who might be interested in paying for that if they're targeted. But $9.99 is quite a lot of money for a streaming service. That's more expensive, I think, than Disney Plus. I think it's about the same price as a Netflix subscription. So you're asking people to pay quite a lot of money. And also, at the moment, there's no app. As Graham points out, they're working on the app. That'll take longer than they say it will, because that's how streaming services work. It is based upon existing technology, a company called Endeavor, who own IMG, I'm sure you're aware of, and they currently power the Super League Plus app. If you're a big fan of rugby league, or if you're a passing fan of rugby league, you'll be aware of that. So the technology is kind of robust and it is there. But I think the issue is pricing and the number of people. I suspect that if there were a large number of French football fans in the UK, then TNT would have done what they needed to do as much as possible, or done more to keep French football on their screens. I think if TNT thought that they sold subscriptions off the back of Ligue 1, then they would do so, because they'd say it was as value for money, but I suspect they don't.
Yeah, and another expense for football fans. Is this just going to drive people to go down the pub and talk to the guy who knows Dimitri and get one of those, I don't know what they call them now, sticks? I understand that you put in your TV and you can get all of the football along with all of the other stuff as well.
I believe so, yes. There are sticks. And they're not the kind of sticks, listeners, that your dog brings back from a walk.
Well, it could do. Depends where he goes for a walk.
Depends where you go walking. But yeah, I was just doing, I was just totting up a few sums, Grim. So TNT in the UK is £30.
Yeah.
Premier Sports for La Liga is about £10.
Yeah.
£10 for Ligue 1 and £25 for Sky, and you get the Premier League and the Bundesliga for that. £75 a month.
Just for football.
Just for football. To be fair, with Sky, you get a lot more with that as well. And you do get a little bit more with TNT as well, because you get the Champions League and stuff for that. But still, £75 a month. That is a lot of money. And obviously, well, I don't think many people are going to watch every single match that's broadcast on every single one of those providers. But even so, that's a good chunk of money. So So, yes, I think that when you've got prices that are that high, it is going to force people that really want to watch it down a more illegal route. It's quite possible that if you're a French national, say, living here, you've probably already got your ways of watching that content anyway, maybe through some of the methods that we've just been talking about. I certainly know people that are from other parts of the world that watch it through a VPN effectively because they're just not going to pay for Portuguese football at 15 quid a month or whatever it is to get access to that. So yeah, it's got every chance of driving people to that. I mean, if you look at what Sky have done, they've broadened their content, certainly with the championship offering of late, and refused to put the price up as well. So I think maybe they can see that there's a fine balance between trying to get as much money as you can to be able to, you know, pay your shareholders and so on, and actually driving people away into the arms of Dimitri, who will do a cracking deal for a really shoddy product.
Well, it is a really shoddy product, apparently.
It is.
But, Terry, this is the fine line that companies like TNT and Sky have to walk, isn't it? Because they can't just dismiss the products that they've been adding to their service for years, because you're going to have to get it from somewhere. Otherwise, if people are in this country and think, well, actually, there's no other way of me watching French football, I've got to go to IPTV, or you've got to wait for the league to come out and with their own app to start putting it out anyway. And if they do it for free, then you've got a problem of people in France going, well, actually, if I get a VPN, then I can start watching the English feed, and I don't mind watching it with English commentary because I can speak English.
Sky put the Bundesliga 2 on their app and on their YouTube channel, but they probably also then have to go to the expense of VPN blocking those, of course, because they can't just like put them out in the clear on there. And so they still have to put that little bit of extra expense. And you're right. Let's go forward a year from now. And let's say Sky have dropped the Bundesliga coverage. And what do I do? Okay, how do I watch my Bundesliga? Where do I go? If there's a possibility that what happens is I'm driven to IPTV because I want to watch Bundesliga. And then by doing that, I actually, you know, for a small fee for a admittedly shoddy product, I get the opportunity to watch all the other stuff that Sky have that's considerably more valuable to them. Then I'm thinking, well, why am I paying for my Sky subscription? And so on. You know. And there's the issue, isn't it? But I would suggest to you that there's probably a very small number of people in the UK who watch Sky in order to watch the Bundesliga. And actually, if I'm being completely truthful, I'm one of them. Primarily, I pay for Sky so that I can watch Premier League and any other sports that I might like there. But that's predominantly what I do. So I think that I would hope that what they've done is that they've done the numbers and go, well, we can afford a kind of drop off in subscribers and maybe people like migrating to other things, to other services or pirate services, just simply because, you know, the audience figures are tiny, and they will, of course, have got, they'll have the Barb figures for the broadcast ratings. They'll also have the figures for the streaming figures, and they'll be very accurate streaming figures about how many people watched Liga, for example, when we're talking about Liga. How many people watch Liga on Discovery Plus? Probably not many. And that's where this all stems from. It's just that, just, you know, in England and in the UK, we've got the Premier League and we've got the Scottish Premier League as well. And these are two incredibly popular services. And we've got the EFL, which is also ridiculously popular, dominating our football landscape here in the UK. If you are a senior league, you know, you're not really thinking, you know, let's make incursions, let's try and build a presence in the UK, because what's the point? You know, you're never going to, only going to get so far, you know, until there's a massive decline, you know, in the English Premier League in its quality. And we see the days like in the 1990s when Serie A, back when Sven was coach of Lazio, you know, when they were the best league in the world, you might then feel that there's room to build a market. But the landscape has changed so massively in that time. That it looks to me like everything's going to get siloed off to these other, either, yeah, like individual services like La Liga TV, like Ligue 1 Pass, like this Serie A Pass that is on OneFootball, for example, which is showing most of the Serie A games, and things like Triller TV, which is doing Portuguese football, and so on. And that's what we're looking at. That seems to be what we're looking at for the future. And unfortunately, I suspect that will be the case with the Bundesliga, you know, in a year's time when that contract runs up. I sincerely hope I'm wrong. Really hope I'm wrong, because it gives me one less thing to pay for.
Yeah, I mean, if it goes the same route as La Liga TV, I mean, that was originally just standalone, and then it was brought into Premier Sport not long after, wasn't it? So it's probably going to go the same way with Ligue 1 Pass, when it doesn't sell any subscriptions and then just gets picked up by someone else.
Yeah.
But yeah, interesting to see what's going to go on there. But I can't see myself watching much Ligue 1 as it stands at the moment. But maybe that will change. And it seems like a fluid situation at the moment. Well, we didn't talk about what we did watch at the weekend, so maybe it's worthwhile catching up a bit on that. Terry, the Bundesliga kicked off on Friday night with Leverkusen, the champions. Another comfortable win for the champions, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Everything was a breeze. Everything went well. Now, of course, needless to say, they won in the last minute, or the what was it? X minute 11th. Of injury time. extraordinary how they keep doing it. They won the Super Cup in much the same fashion. It's kind of ridiculous. You do wonder whether Leverkusen can keep winning these games in injury time. I know we said this before, like, you know, obviously Ferguson's United won an awful lot of games in injury time. The term Fergie time was coined for that. But at the same time, it's like, was it as many as that? It's just a mad amount of games that have been won in that amount of time. And you do wonder how long they can keep pressing and winning that, and what that actually means, and what it looks like if that was to stop. But yeah, Leverkusen off to an absolute flyer.
And Dortmund won as well, with a young English talent there getting the goals as well.
Yeah, Jamie Gittens, as he's now known. Jamie was previously known as Jamie Bino Gittens. He has now changed his persona name, so to speak. His football name is now to Jamie Gittens. He's removed the Bino. His father's idea, his father being the Bino, saying it sounds better with just Jamie Gittens. Why don't you just drop that? And so, which is all very nice. But yeah, 20 years old, winger. Had some shoulder injuries with Dortmund over the last season and a bit or so, which has hampered his progress. But very highly thought of there, and has been told in no uncertain terms by the new coach, Nuri Sahin, that much is expected of him this season, and that this is the season where he's expected to blossom. And so he comes off the bench for the first game of the season and scores two goals and asks, how's that for you, boss? So really, really good, and obviously incredibly encouraging for England. In the hope that, you know, another option for Lee Carsley to think about, although Lee Carsley, being the under-21 coach, will know Jamie Gittens extremely well. So interesting to see whether or not he might be an outsider for an England call-up. Mm. Who knows?
Who knows? Well, I had an enjoyable weekend as well of football, because I watched Arsenal beat Villa. Put into bed any idea that Unai Emery is the big bogeyman for Mikel Arteta. So nice, comfortable tune. Well, it wasn't really comfortable. It was a tactical masterclass. A fantastic game to watch. Well, fantastic because we won 2-0. So yeah, that always helps. And Jan, you see, your fears were unfounded, weren't they, for Sunderland? When I said last week, you know, they hadn't conceded a goal, and they still haven't conceded a goal yet this season, have they?
No, they haven't. Obviously, it was a 3 o'clock game, so I couldn't watch it live, but I watched it back in its highlight form. And yeah, I think Sunderland were easily the better team that deserved the win, and they were great. And we were out without Jack Clark, who is who's moving to Ipswich Town. Unfortunately for us, good luck to him. He wants to play at the highest level. Quite what an attacking player is going to do at Ipswich when they're going to be spending the rest of their season defending, I don't know, but good luck to him anyway. Romain Mundell came in on the left and actually played almost exactly like Jack Clark did, just cutting in on his right foot, and that's where his goal came from. And I think we could have had a couple more. And considering how many goals Burnley had scored prior to this game, I think they had one shot on target. So that just shows that Sunderland really stifled them and shut them out. So yeah, onward we march. 3 out of 3, 7 goals and none conceded.
Yeah, you found out Scott Parker immediately. He's been found out already, 3 games in. Will he be found out this weekend? Because we've got Burnley in the box set, actually. Burnley for the lunchtime game on Saturday. It's a hotly contested East Lancashire derby between Burnley and Blackburn Rovers. St. Pauli are back in the box set on Friday night. Didn't win their first game, did they, Terry? But it's a great match, isn't it, on Friday? Union versus St. Pauli. That will be a cracker, won't it?
It'll be a cracking atmosphere, Graham. Yeah, absolutely. St. Pauli were given a lesson by Heidenheim, beaten 2-0 at home. I think they've got some work to do, I think, St. Pauli. But yeah, that's going to be, the two cult clubs, the two sort of like clubs of the left. often put together are sort of like seen as being the same, but in many ways quite different. But I'll go into a little bit into that in the preview. I don't want to go on too long about it, because I went on a little bit about it in my long piece that I did there. So yeah, so focusing much more on the game, lively atmosphere and plenty of action.
Well, there's also Man United Liverpool, that's on Sunday. And I think one of the most interesting games, I think, to watch over the weekend will be Lazio versus Milan, just to see what the atmosphere is like there, because I'm sure they'll do a great job of remembering Sven before that game. So that's in there on Saturday night. And if you want to read what we think of all the games that we choose for this weekend's box set, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set and subscribe, and it will be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. And every lunchtime, if you subscribe, except next week, because that's the international break, so we won't be doing it next week. But yeah, whenever we have a box set, which is when all the club teams are playing, then it will be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Interesting.